Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon. A couple things we'll go over real quick, just like normal. Visit our website. We've got a few things going on there that I think you'll want to take a look at. Our new paradigm page, we're adding quite a few things there regularly. We've got some heirloom seeds that we just posted on there, outlets for heirloom seeds. Take a look at that. We found that you got to be really careful with the seeds that you find on the internet. They might say heirloom at the top of the page, but if you just randomly pick seeds that you want to grow, make sure that you pay attention to the fine print on what you're buying, because they mix in the Monsanto crap in with the heirloom stuff on some of these sites that we've seen. So just be careful there. Also, we do work on a donation basis, so we got a donate tab there. I got to put that out there, I guess. And besides that, Ramon, we've got a pretty special lady with us tonight.
Yes, we do. Gentry is an author of a book within a book, Dreaming Down Heaven, a revolutionary new take on personal growth genre that combines accessible notification with illuminating fiction. Dreaming Down Heaven presents 12 life-changing keystones to awakening through entertaining fiction, brings them into three-dimensional reality. Together, the notification and fiction presentation of Gentry's powerful teaching provides the knowledge necessary to surmount fear, awaken to self-love, and step into a life of outrageous joy. Ooh, outrageous joy. Yay! Jeannie, how are you?
Hi, honey. Outrageous joy. It's great.
I love it. Well, Jenny, I'm reading your book now, and I'm about three-quarters of the way through the fiction half of it. And I have got to say, this is some fantastic work. I don't think I've ever seen this quite this approach to this type of work. Amazing. Amazing.
Thank you, honey. I have to say, I'm really grateful to hear that. You know, some people say to me, well, you probably don't need feedback. And it's like, why? You know? So I'm delighted that you like it. I'm delighted. So thank you.
Is this your first book?
Well, it's my first book in that I had to teach myself how to write. And so I have three books that as I was learning to write, you know, that I never really submitted for a publisher. I was just trying to get my ideas together, my understanding of, you know, what I really wanted to share. I always knew that this style of book, and I don't mean the fact that there's a fiction and a nonfiction. I mean just the fiction part where it was a very modern take on a woman's life who sort of, let's just say accidentally, you know, gets on this great journey of awakening. So I wanted it to be very contemporary, kind of hip, you know, and not boring. Because, you know, some of these books, you can just be so bored. Brilliant wisdom, but, you know, you've got to keep your attention on it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So let's go back to your own personal awakening. Where does it start, if you don't mind talking about that?
Well, you know, honey, there weren't any burning bushes. There was no chorus of angels, nary a trumpet. Not a burning bush. It was very disappointing. In fact, I would have to say that any idea I had about awakening was in hindsight. So do you want me to start about my journey, or do you want me to start about how I figured it out?
Well, let's start with the journey.
Well, I think like many people, I had been a dilettante. And I honestly don't even remember what that word means anymore, but it was sort of like I was lazy. You know, I'd read about it and I would pretend to be spiritual, and I had no idea I was pretending. I had no idea, but I realized, you know, I'd done all these things to quote unquote save the world, and I've been very active in social change and so forth. And one day I finally got that I wasn't going to be able to save the world until I saved myself. And so there was a day I actually drew a line in the sand that was along the lines of, okay, no more play. It's going to have to get real. And I would say, and I remember when that was, you know, I remember very distinctly the day, what I was doing, and that I was going to start bringing my awareness into the moment kind of thing, which of course takes a long time to really get into practice. But so I wore amulets and everything to hook my own attention, you know, so that I would just stay with the program instead of only going to the program when I didn't feel good. And I think with so many of these things, the only time we really get spiritual is when the world is sort of falling down around us.
Right.
And then we'll go, you know, and I had to be honest, you know, my world had fallen down everywhere around me. You know, it didn't have the trappings of failure. I mean, I had cute clothes and, you know, a good job and all of that. But the internal world was just not very sparkly. So I had to get tough, you know, with myself.
It's funny. It always seems, because both me and Tom and actually all of our guests, including yourself, have had that moment where we just get kicked in the head, you know, backhand. It seems for some reason, I know it doesn't have to be that way, but for some reason it seems that that's the only way us humans really get the pictures when we get slapped.
I absolutely believe that's true, because it's so easy to say, to stay sound asleep, no matter, you know, whether it hurts or not. It's easier to be asleep because, you know, to wake up or whatever you want to call it, you have to go against the whole grain of everything we've been taught. I mean, you have to break with fear, for God's sakes, which means that you're going to go out of sorts with the rest of the belief system. You know, if you're going to really try to stay out of fear, then who are you going to talk to? You know, because folks, you know, the way that our society or our belief system or however you call it, you know, it's just based on fear. And to pull out of that means to go out of harmony with the folks. And yet that's the only way, you know. So it's an interesting thing. It's not for the faint of heart, you know.
Absolutely.
Did you grow up Christian? Do you come from a Christian background?
You know, I'd have to say yes, but I, you know, it's a very delicate question, isn't it? I would say that my family did their very best to create that a belief system within me, yes.
For a lot of us, for me personally, growing up Christian and then later start questioning it, and when I started questioning it to the who I thought were the right people, you know, the priest and my dad and stuff like that, and it was just, don't question those things, just accept it for, you know, and it just, that wasn't a good enough answer for me.
Yes, I think it's very complicated. For myself, there was the hypocrisy that I happened to witness at a very young age, that I didn't buy the hypocrisy. You know, I didn't buy the judgment. And, you know, I didn't know how to get out of it, but there was those things. And you know, I want to be clear. I think that there are profound, advanced, amazing spiritual beings who are Christian, as there are with, you know, all of the sacred traditions. But so many of the subsets, if you will, of Christianity or any of the rest, they start laying the traditions of man over it, as opposed to trying to understand what you might think of as a tradition of God. So, you know, Jesus is my hero. I mean, I think Jesus is the bomb. There isn't a thing that man ever said that I didn't think was pristine and amazing and sacred. But I don't hold the concepts of the religion very close to my heart.
Right. Their interpretations have a tendency to become their law.
Yes. And of course, that doesn't seem to reflect the teachings of the Christ. Doesn't seem to reflect it at all.
Right. You mean...
The religion takes it from the personal relationship with God into the community relationship with God, you know, or the the church's relationship. You can't have your relationship directly with God. You have to have it through the church.
Through the intermediary.
Right.
And, you know, I've actually thought about this with my own students, because it's a complicated thing from my point of view as a teacher, that I both have to sort of hook a student's attention to keep them interested enough so that they will, you know, stay present to learn, and at the same time be trying to push them away because they're going to have to go direct. You know, it's like, rely on me, but don't really rely on me, you know?
Right.
Because you sort of need some guidance, you know, to break with this whole crazy belief system. And at the same time, you're going to have to go direct. Without an intermediary, you're going to have to, you know, be present with the silent knowledge or the universal consciousness or whatever little word, you know, you want to talk about with your communication, you know. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of see it as the teachers out there, all they can, if they're a good teacher, all that they really can do is point and show somebody where the door is, and that the person has to walk through it themselves.
Well, isn't that the truth? You know, the thing that was so motivating to me about writing this book is I thought that I was probably the last person on the planet who would wake up. In fact, the thought never occurred to me. I just wanted to get rid of the pain. And so to really, you know, get in there, it was like I felt that I had to leave a breadcrumb trail of words or something like that, so that I could, if anybody was willing to learn by any of my mistakes, let me just tell you what they were, you know. And, I don't know if people can really do that. It's like we almost need to replace the old belief system with some new beliefs, and maybe it helps to see the possibilities of new beliefs. But it does seem like, as like Ramon was saying, we have to sort of run real hard into that brick wall to start shaking out some new behaviors, you know?
Yeah, I remember for me, I was 17 or 18, and in what I thought was spirituality was you had to belong to some type of organization, not necessarily the Christian church, because I was kind of done with that by that age. But then when I started looking at these other spiritual beliefs, if it didn't have like a church setting, then it wasn't good enough. So it's like that addiction to the mediator. We've become so addicted that I see it happening with everything. You go to your meditation teacher and I see people become addicted to them, and they don't know how to become their own teachers and their own masters.
Well, she kind of talks about something real similar to that in her book. You're not the voices in your head, right?
Yes.
I kind of see a strong parallel there in what Ramon was saying in what I just read the other day out of the book. And by the way, I love that the acronym LIQUID.
Oh, do you?
Oh my God, that is so awesome! That is one I will use in my personal life.
That's great, you know, and it's tricky because you have to each of those steps in LIQUID, you know, is a whole process unto itself. But at least it's a way to kind of hold it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I want to go back to what Ramon was saying, if I can, for a second. And then, of course, I'd be delighted to talk about LIQUID or anything else. And now I just completely lost my train of thought. How's that flowing? You said something I wanted to talk about, Lord.
Well, I was talking about the addiction to teachers and mediators.
Okay. There's just sort of one line I wanted to throw out there. And that is, we must be willing to give up seeking to find. You know, it's not like there's one hard and fast rule. You sort of have to be willing to do everything that you can to find out the truth. I mean, there's so many places of deceit in our world. And then there's so many places of just illusion where it's not bad or good. It's just, you know, the planet's hurling through space at thousands of miles an hour. And there's nary a breeze in my hair, you know, that kind of thing. So there's illusion and there's deceit. And we have to really get very determined about our seeking. But then we have to be willing to find. You know, people put on this little mask of, look what a little spiritual seeker I am. And that's nice. But then what? You know, it's like you say, someone going to class and paying homage to what could be a great master. But then what? You've got to allow your own mastery, which means you have to find. You know? And it's hard because people, you know, get into that sort of sheep thing, you know, following around folks. And, and that was a pretty good animal sound. And gosh, it's so important to, you know, it's like the ego says, if you say I'm a master, then that's egoic and there's something terribly wrong with you. And so it's sort of like that with finding. It's sort of like that with becoming a master. I remember when I was first going to use the term that I was awakened, and I was embarrassed. So I still wasn't awakened because I was embarrassed, right? Mm. But it was a real conundrum to have an attitude that said, I am okay, you know? In fact, I'm more than okay. I have inherited, you know, a birthright of magnificence. And I am so honored to say the same applies to you, you know? But we have so many things that we've learned that said, don't do it. You know, you have to stay small to be lovable or some silly thing like that. Or, of course, with you men folk, you have to go out and make a bunch of money or something or you're valueless.
Mm, yeah.
And then with us, you know, there's just all of these things that we have to break. So I think you're absolutely right, honey. And it's complicated. It's complicated for people. But it's fun when you get on the journey, you know? Yeah. Not for the faint of heart, but lots of fun.
The funny thing I find is it's fun. It's complicated. But then at the same time, it's so simple, it's complicated.
Yes, yes.
That's what I've been finding more and more. It's whenever I put way too much energy or overthink the thinking part of it, it ruins it. Letting go is just the hardest part, but it's so simple.
Well, I think what we do, at least my experience of it for myself, is I had to learn everything I could possibly learn and to finally realize that I hadn't changed a thing. All I'd done was memorize a bunch of information. So that was the first part. And then it's like this expression of, I've got to go process that. So we process and we learn and we do all of these things as we're unraveling, you know, our reality. And then one day it's like, it boils down to, it's just love, you know? It is love, and the love that it is isn't some simplistic, romantic, male-female animal hookup. It is this sort of profound view of acceptance, of really allowing, this sort of state of grace, which is just based on profound love and acceptance. And then all of that work, well, you had to do it. But then one day you realize there's just one thing you really got to do. You know, that's like you got to come from your heart instead of your head. It's easy, and it, like you say, it's very complicated. Because it's not the first thing you do, it's the last thing you do, you know? Because yeah. We know we're supposed to love unconditionally. My God, everybody tells us that. And the first thing we do is judge ourselves for not loving unconditionally. And then the judge comes out with a 2x4 and starts whacking on you, you know. And so then you sort of move away from the idea that you have to love unconditionally, because every time you go, your judge beats you up. So you take on some other part of the journey for a while, and then, you know, you find your way back there.
The one hard thing is because the word love and to love unconditionally means something completely to everyone. And I'll give you an example. There's a famous saying, and it was said by a gentleman called Alex Coyler. And I loved it so much I tattooed it on my arm. And it's
okay.
It says, the love you deny is the pain you carry. And every time someone reads that, they get a completely different interpretation from the next person. The one common one, it was like, oh, what woman hurt you?
And I was, really?
Yeah. That's, really? That's the number one answer I get. Which for me, it has nothing to do with a woman. It has all to do with myself. But
I understand. I understand, honey.
Yeah. Well, back to the question. What does really mean to love unconditionally really means? Because what does it mean to you?
Okay. I'm not going to answer it in a really nice, little clean way. I'll just talk about it. How's that?
It sounds perfect.
You know, first of all, our belief system is based on dualistic perception. Good, bad, right, wrong, love, hate, that kind of thing. And people will say that certain things are impossible. I mean, people that really seem to be well thought will say, well, of course that's impossible. And what they don't understand is that there's an entire type of perception that is not based on dualistic thinking. It is based on simply what is. Just the observation of what is. You know, unconditional love, the way we get in trouble with that is the first thing that would happen in someone's mind, and not intellectually, but like what would sort of spur them on, is this idea that if I'm going to love unconditionally, they'll start looking for something lovable about somebody. And God knows there are some people who certainly don't, on the surface, appear to be lovable. But the key to this is we're not looking for lovable characteristics here. We're looking for what is the emotional experience that is going to inform my view of life. To allow the experience of kindness, acceptance, that outrageous we were talking about before. You know, it's not lovable attributes. It's not like, dude, I like your outfit. You know, it's something that is a way of seeing the world. So loving without conditions isn't, dude, you can really hurt me and I'm still going to love you. That isn't, it isn't formed in that way. It's formed in the idea that I can experience the world however I want because I have, let's just use that nasty word, control. I have all of the little levers and buttons within me are under my dominion. I don't have to feel pain because someone says something unkind to me. I can choose my reactions, my responses, and how to hold things. Love can be very ruthless. Love is, you know, to me, it's the truth. It is simply, I will hold the truth unconditionally. I will accept and I will surrender to the divine plan. That doesn't mean some sort of insipid little, you know, roll over and get all victimized. You know, it's something like I am really quite aware that there's a lot more going on than I know about. And so many people, you know, it's like, I know it all, you know? Well, all we know is our little tiny limited perception. So I'm talking around it. I'm not giving you a specific answer. But if we were to throw in the synonym, my synonym is acceptance. But it's not resignation. It's not defeat. It is acceptance because it is my pleasure to love.
I like that.
I like that as well.
Good. Yay. Yay. I love you guys.
Okay.
So, go ahead, Tom.
Well, I was going to get back into the book just a little bit.
Great.
Kind of started on talking about liquid. I'd like to elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay, super.
So would you set the stage here, what liquid attempts to resolve in a person?
Well, I think that there's, you know, we have X number of beliefs that describe how we are in the not describe, that's not the best way to say that. How we are in the world is based on what we believe. We think that we came up with all of our opinions on our own, and we sort of missed the part that we were fed these opinions by our caregivers, by the media, by our social networks, you know, by the teachers, the kids we grew up with, you know, whatever. And those beliefs that arose from all of these things create our life experience. It's like if we think that, you know, that someone can hurt us by saying something unkind, then we can keep ourselves in a whole bunch of misery. So, I mean, that's just a big overarching belief. But the idea about with liquid was that to try to find some ways to look at our beliefs that could sort of take us through the process of understanding that they were present, what, you know, what they were good for, and to be able to move past them. Because the beliefs that are based in fear, I call them false beliefs. Well, we have to tidy some of that stuff up, you know, because it doesn't work for us. Whether we have come to the conclusion it doesn't work for us or not, it doesn't work for us. So why don't I just give you the sort of the cliff notes on, sure, on this idea of liquid. The idea was to come up with an acronym that you could remember, and then you could memorize these things in the book so that it could just help you when you got yourself in a wanting to go toe-to-toe with one of your beliefs. So the first is listen. The L is listen. And it's like listen to your thoughts or all those voices in your head, you know, all the people, as I like to call them. And see if you can locate the belief that is at the core of the unease that, you know, that you're wanting to investigate. So the first thing you've done is listen for it. And then you want to identify the belief just as carefully and honestly as you can. And then I say use the impeccable clarity of your impartial observer to guide you. And I'll come back and say something about the impartial observer in a second. So then it was question. The Q was question. Question its validity. Is it really true? Is it really true? Remember, we're being honest here. So many of our beliefs are so cherished. We're holding on to them for dear life. But are they true? I mean, can you know without a shadow of a doubt that something's true? And so what I say is you need to look at it through the eyes of the impartial observer again, who is, you might think of, like I said, I'll go back and talk about that. So then intuit what it would be like to live the rest of your life with the belief. Really. I mean, keep that belief just right there, this fearful belief, which I'm assuming. And what is it if you take it all the way through the life? I mean, how does that impact you? What does it do to your shoulders? You know, the tightening in the chest, you know, what would it be? And then, you know, to take the time to then really imagine what it would be like, what your life would be like without it. You know, just to go ahead and play it through in your, you know, imagination. And then decide if you want this belief impacting your experience of life. If you don't, make a conscious, willful commitment to release the belief. Of course, it's going to take some work. But that will help you sort of, you know, separate it out so you can see what you've got going. So let me just say a few words about the impartial observer, because this is like a whole little teaching here.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's like we have, you know, all those voices in our head, all these people. And, you know, there's the person in the white outfit telling you what a good saintly kind of person you are and justifying everything you do. And then there's the judge who's sitting there and, you know, robes and a gavel and sending you to indeterminate sentences for the smallest infraction. And there's, you know, the little know-it-all in your brain, don't tell me what to do. And, you know, all these little voices. And they create such commotion. I mean, it's just like it's a mob scene sometimes, you know. And the impartial observer is, there's a million different words you could use for it. The guardian angel, the voice of the soul, you know, the voice of reason, and I don't mean the reason of the brain. We could even think of it as the eyes and ears of the heart. But there is a place within you where you know. We don't go out and get wisdom. What we're sort of doing is removing all the crud that is sitting on top of the wisdom. And in that place, the place of you know, the voice is soft. It isn't up there at the round table, you know, slinging hash across at the, you know, whoever's sitting there in the mob scene. It's voice, the quiet voice. And it's like, honey, honey, listen. And you can access that. You can, you know, you can go out and you can do a meditation. You can turn it into, you know, an animal, a rock, a crystal, you know, some fairy other kind of apparition. But it's just a way to move your awareness outside of all the fearful yammering of the mob crowd and to access that part of you that really does know, that really doesn't have a question about what you know. So, like I said, it's a study, it's a practice. You know, I write about it a lot in the book and a lot more and, you know, a lot more detail to help you get like some folks on your team that that you have awareness of that aren't the fear mongers.
I was, I contemplated and procrastinated and all those things, all those aided things coming up to this interview. And then finally, last week, I grabbed the book. I've got my reading list is horrendous. And I grabbed the book, and to be honest, I was just going to kind of, I was gonna thumb through, and then I was gonna read the second half, and I sat down and I read the first couple pages. About an hour later, I looked up at the clock and went, "Oh boy, this thing just actually hooked me." I was drawn in after the first couple of pages. The format that this is put out in. I love the magical theater, by the way. I want to go there.
Well, you know, I love the magical theater too. I love the whole concept of it. And that, you know, the title of the book, Dreaming Down Heaven, I think is really telling because the whole idea of dreaming down heaven is we don't have to wait till we die and hope that we get through a whole bunch of judgment stuff, you know, that to have this experience of heaven, because it's the whole idea of, you can absolutely bring heaven to earth because you can, you know, bring your love with you.
Yep.
You know, you can bring all of these, you know, kind things, if you will. And I don't mean insipid kind. You know, I just mean doing the right thing. You know, the real problem I had with saving the world was just exactly what I said. I hadn't saved myself. So therefore, I going to be in reaction the entire time I was out there doing, you know, my social change stuff, you know, and I was going to be mad and angry and, you know, and gosh, you know, we change the world by changing ourselves, you know, one person at a time.
That goes back to the verse in the Bible, before you pluck the speck out of your brother's eye, pull the log out of your own or something like that.
Well, that's great, eh?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, honey, I don't even know what I was saying. I was just, you know, I love that he kept reading the book. The only really rotten interview I did was someone that just didn't want to read it, never even looked at it, you know, and so they just had me basically sit there and read it, you know, and yeah. It wasn't a rotten interview, but, you know, I've been really tickled that, you know, a lot of my interview folks have read it. Oh, actually, all of them have read it and loved it, and that it's just, it's great, because I didn't write this book to become famous, to aggrandize myself. I wrote it to help people see what their choices are, to have fun, and so then if the, you know, the radio folks love it, then that means we get to help more people.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Get to spread the word. And gosh, that makes me very, very happy, you know.
So, okay, we do need to ask. We do need to ask our patent question here for the Conscious TV show. We'd like to ask everybody what their definition of consciousness is and how it affects our world.
Well, let's see. You know, Ramon, of course, told me he was going to ask me that, and I managed not to think up an answer, so which is my preference. My preference would be just to sit here and tell you what comes into my mind, you know? And I think of consciousness is that aware life force that is animating us. That the consciousness is the alignment. It's like if we say that we want to become conscious, it's like the aligning with the life force, the animation of ourselves. The, you know, we could break it down and say another definition, of course, would be that which was great awareness. When I said that you you get in there and you move the garbage that we've piled on top of the authentic self, you know, the authentic self is born conscious, whole, without need for improvement, has a birthright of innate perfection. The consciousness is the voice of the impartial observer, or thought form of the impartial observer. So I think that all of it, you know, goes back to this delicious, almost unknowable quality that we each have that links us to the heart of the sacred, that animates the animal figure that we are occupying for the time being.
Yay.
And even, you know, I don't have something like a nice little sentence for you. Those are my thoughts on it.
So, you know, there's a lot of people are talking about creating your own reality and that sort of thing. I kind of see it a little bit with a little different twist to it. No, I don't see it so much as creating my own reality, but going with the flow of life and trusting that it brings into my life the things that will make me happy.
Mm. Well, you know, honey, I think both things are true. Because if life is going to bring you what will make you happy, you have to also be so willing to be happy. Because the truth is, you can choose happiness no matter what life is bringing. And that choice of choosing happiness is the consciousness playing holds barred for you. It's like if I think of creating your own reality, if you create a reality that says fear will not be my guide, that acceptance will be my guide, or joy will be my guide, then you are going to get, life is absolutely going to give you things that will make you happy. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win the publisher's clearinghouse, you know?
Right.
You know, I have it in my mind that if I look at it in my mind, Oprah should have me on her show because she should play Maya in the movie, Maya, the character from my book. And, you know, and then everybody would read the book, and wouldn't that be fun? And we'll have a beach house, and you all can come. And yet I also know that I can't say sure what should happen, that I can't have my happiness held captive to whether the beloved Oprah ever ends up hearing about Maya, you know? Right. So I think both things are true. And my strong feeling about you, honey, is that you are absolutely doing that already. It's like your reality that you have created is already open to the infinite, to the magnificent. And so whether you have a perception of you're creating your own reality or not, the truth is you've taken big responsibility for your reality, and life is bringing you all sorts of things that are great because you see them that way.
I will have to agree with you.
Okay, good. Because I thought, gosh, I've just gone out on the limb here.
No. You hit that one pretty well on the head. So,
It's funny because I had a situation where I teach English here in Japan, and I walked into class, and my coworker was teaching a class, and they were talking about happiness. And she, the student, she suffers from depression, and she asked me, why are you always so happy? What makes you so happy? So my coworker started saying, oh, because he has a lovely wife, and he has a job, and da da da. And I said, no, that has nothing to do with it, because my wife can get up and leave tomorrow. I can lose my job. And, you know, I said, I make myself happy. I decided a long time ago to make myself happy. And I realized this when I was 23, that I was out of work. And as soon as I did that, things just started moving along easier. And she just couldn't get the idea that you can actually make yourself happy, that it's not possessions or loved ones or other people that make you happy.
And so what she's done then, the reason she's depressed, is because she has placed her happiness at risk every time she's connected it to an event beyond her control. You know, I really think we have to, it's just like whether we choose monogamy or polyamory for our love life, it's like that with happiness. You know, we have to choose to have a monogamous, you know, relationship with happiness. You know, happiness doesn't come and go away from us. We come and go away from it. You know, peace doesn't come and go. It's always right there. Happiness, the potential, the moment, the possibility of happiness is always right there. So it's a choice. But that woman, that beloved woman, doesn't realize she has a choice.
Well, you have to hurry up and translate your book into Japanese then.
Well, you know what? I spent a year in Asia when I was in my 20s, and it was funny. Instead of going to Europe
year?
Or doing... Pardon me?
Yes,
it was just recently.
Yes.
It's been a minute, darling. It's been a long minute. Anyway, I love Japan. The people there are, you know, so interested in new thought. And it really pleases me, the idea that someday I would go to Japan or someday, you know, have the book. You know, perhaps there will be some folks that you can share the book with over there who knows what would happen, you know. It's available on Kindle now, so enough people read English that it's available around the world on Kindle if someone doesn't want to wait for it, you know, to show up from Amazon, you know?
Yeah.
But I would love that. That would just make my heart sing. I went to Japan. The first time I went, I was 21 years old. I took myself to Japan. I had a long love affair.
So... Ramon has a little bit different take on the people in Japan, what he's seen and experienced there. Everybody's so kind of the stuffed shirt is what he's experienced. But he's right there, right outside of Tokyo, right, Ramon?
Yeah, I'm about 45 minutes from Tokyo on train.
Well, and of course, the culture is very, I want to say this without saying anything.
This is the way I'll put
it. It's formal. It's a formal culture.
Correct.
But those walls are breaking down like crazy. And to be able, you know, I have Eric Pearl is a friend of mine. He wrote a book called The Reconnection. And his largest audience for this information, it's phenomenal healing frequency that they have really developed an extraordinary understanding of, you know, he goes to Japan and the place goes crazy for this healing. And so I know that the paradigm, it's just like all these other paradigms, you know, it's changing. It's like there isn't a place of that kind of structure or fear on the planet that isn't being challenged right now. So I completely appreciate the difficulties in going in to a culture that's a formal culture. I understand that. But I mean, let's face it, even here, it seems to be just as rigid, and people are so rigid with their familiar beliefs, you know?
Right.
And so somebody can come up and whack you on the back and go, hey, partner, or whatever they're doing. But it's just as formal because it's just as structured within that understanding of the beliefs, you know, like say the Texas part of the belief system, you know? So. Yeah.
What I find here is the, there's a lot of parts, like every culture has these things that hold you back. But what I find here is that, how can I say this? You always, well, for myself, I always try to take the best part out of certain cultures and belief systems and add them to my own. But what I see a lot of people do, even from the Western point of view, I see them do this too, where they just trade it all in and then take all the Western stuff. So that's the good, the bad, you know, everything about it.
It's so, like a parody, though, because it's like an exaggerated point of view of the Western stuff, you know?
Yeah. And like, that's not everybody, because there's some really awakened people here.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Ramon, nothing cracks me up more than the Japanese cowboys.
Really?
Oh, but my God, Kobe beef is like, you know, and of course those guys are just still massaging the cow, right? But, you know, the best beef I've ever had was in Okinawa, Japan. So
I didn't hear. Did you hear her, Tom?
Yeah, you cut out there for a second.
Yeah, can you repeat that?
Oh, what I just said?
Yeah.
The best beef. Said that the best I ever had was in Okinawa, and it was from Japan. You know, it was Japanese Kobe beef.
Yeah. The
anyway.
Yeah. There we go. The reason why that beef is so good is because those cows are happy. They get treated better than some humans. They have a beer every night. They get a massage, warm bath.
Yeah.
I mean,
great.
Yeah, and that's why the beef is so good.
And the truth is, if you know, I've read a lot about this. Not like I'm an expert or anything, but I have an opinion. And the opinion is twofold. One is it's less important what we put in our mouth than what comes out of our mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But since we do have to eat, I am not a vegetarian. And yet I think that with our livestock, our food animals, the food we put in our mouth, I so wish that we could be more honoring. Because I feel like it would make all the difference in the world in our own sense of well-being. You know, that these animals, these vegetables, are so generous with their life force, you know, to keep us sustained. And I wish we could be more honoring.
I feel, at least because I grow little plants here, I feel when you do that with them and just the thank yous, I feel like they grow so much livelier. Like you can see it in the green of their color. Not all of my plants are like that. One of them, I don't know, looks like it's suffering from depression. I'm trying to figure out what's wrong.
Well, overwater, underwater, lack of food, too much food.
Too much sun, not enough sun. Yeah, I'm trying to find a balance. But we're coming up at the top of the hour, right, Tom?
Yeah, we've got about 7 minutes left here. So,
Jeannie, is there any information of how people can contact you, get the book, best way, autographs, stuff like that?
Well, the book is the easiest way for folks to get the book is to order it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or, you know, any of the bookstore chains. I have actually gone ahead and ordered a few cases myself, so I would probably be selling them, you know, the autograph books. But if you go to my website, the easiest thing to do is to go to my website, and there you can see, you know, what I'm up to, because I have a retreat center here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and, you know, work with folks that want to come out and do some retreats. You can order the book, Dreaming Down Heaven, from my website. And the easiest way to remember the name of the website is just to put in Dreaming Down Heaven. No spaces, just D-R-E-A-M-I-N-G, down, D-O-W-N, heaven, H-E-A-V-E-N.com. And, you know, I still lead journeys to sacred places. I'm taking a group to Teotihuacan in March from the 9th to the, no, the 11th to the 16th of March. And we still have some spots available on that journey. Teotihuacan is like the ancient spiritual home or the heart of the Toltec wisdom, you know, which is the tradition that I finally just decided to adopt, or it adopted me. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. And I still take folks there. I've been there probably 70 times, and we still go there because every time it's like playing in the planet's version of the magical theater. You know, the magical theater in the book is in the dream time, but in real life, Teotihuacan has been the magical theater for me. So we're going to go play there. Bring it to life.
I will have to. I will make it there one of these days. I'm an energy fiend. I just love places that hold that kind of energy.
It's stunning. It's not like a little bit stunning. It's outrageously stunning, honey.
Wasn't Teotihuacan I saw on the famous Mexican ufologist that does a big TV show.
Musang.
Jaime Musang. He showed like a video clip of a light beam hitting the pyramid. Was it Teotihuacan?
Could be. I don't know, honey. You know, there's been so many mystical things that happen there. I mean, it's just sort of crazy. It's like it's alive. You know, the truth is, of course, the whole planet is alive. But there are some places where the veil is thinner, where the mystical is undeniable, no matter, you know, whether you're willing to accept it or not. It's undeniable. And Teotihuacan is like that. So I wouldn't be surprised. And I'll just say, period. You know, I've seen things happen there with my people, with myself, with, I mean, you don't even have to be interested in the paranormal to have it, you know, the pyramids just start breathing, and then you're going, okay, I'm in, let's go, you know.
Yeah.
So
what I noticed with the paranormal, quote unquote paranormal, is that I don't feel like most people really get into the paranormal. It's more like the paranormal get into them, like, hey, I'm here, deal with me, kind of thing. And that's, at least for myself, that's how I found myself really getting into a lot of the mystical and esoteric part of it.
Well, you know, it's a great calling card because it really breaks down any idea that we think we have all the answers. Nothing like a nice little paranormal experience to break your point of view.
Exactly.
It's great.
Exactly.
What you don't want to do is have it be the end all. It's not the final thing. It is the great calling card of the mystic, you know. But it isn't the mystic, if that makes sense. Did that make sense, or do I need to say something more about that?
It's the wake up call. It's kind of what I see it as.
Yes.
It definitely.
You can't worship phenomena. Some people get into worshiping the psychic phenomena or the paranormal or whatever, and you don't want to worship it. Be so grateful. Be so delighted that it's opening the door, you know?
It's funny, when you do worship it, you push it away. That's the funny thing about it.
Well, I suppose that's true, huh?
Yeah. Once...
But I've seen it go all sorts of ways, so what's I can't that? Wait to hear. You've got to tell me how the book ends, if you'd like. You know, if you're... I'm so tickled you're reading it, and I can't wait to hear your book report.
I will give you one. I will send you an email on my official book report.
Okay, great. Maybe you can even go on Amazon and tell the world if you feel like it.
Oh, I would have. There's a lot of that too. Absolutely.
That's great.
Well, we're about ready to wrap up here. So, Jenny, I want to thank you so much for your enlightening conversation, and I hope to maybe one day have you back on. And next book you write, we'll definitely get you in here for sure. Have you got any irons in the fire as far as another book?
You know, honey, about the last thing I want to do right this minute is write another book. honestly, I absolutely am dedicated to getting this book out into the world. Every day on Facebook, I'm always put an inspirational message on Facebook every day, and a lovely little community of people who sometimes ask questions and sometimes we play hard and laugh a lot. And, you know, I invite all of your listeners that would be interested to come play with us on Facebook. And then, you know, let's get this book out. People go, well, what happens? Because they want to know what happens to a couple of the characters. I've had men ask me what happens to the characters. And, you know, and perhaps someday we will go there. But right now we have to make sure that this darling's birth process is supported as best I can. I hope that you all will come dream down heaven.
Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. If you go to our website, or we'll have a link there here on BBS also to Jenny's website, and to link the Amazon page for her book also. So, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week. Got anything, Ramon?
Your quote.
Oh, yeah. Quote. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. Good night, everybody.
Good night.